Let's talk about the future, particularly in terms of adjuvant studies with trastuzumab. Can you comment on the work that your group and you have done looking at bevacizumab plus trastuzumab, and do you see that moving into the adjuvant setting?
Well, I certainly hope it moves into the adjuvant setting, and we're going to be having meetings even here at this joint meeting to talk about what the replacement for B31 and 006 will be. I think there's more than enough very strong biologic data, very compelling biologic and preclinical data indicating that this combination is rational. There's now clinical data, very early clinical data, very small numbers, both in the phase one and the phase two setting that indicate that this is an active regimen. So I think it's ready to be moved into a bigger evaluation, and my sense is in short order it should be ready to be moved into the adjuvant setting. The bevacizumab data from E2100 indicate what bevacizumab as a standalone does. We know what Herceptin does in the HER2 positive population, and we now know that based not only on preclinical but clinical data, the HER2 population has a higher VEGF level. So all of the dots connect. Now it's a matter of showing A, it's safe, and B, showing some clear efficacy signal to allow us to think about launching a larger study.
Can you talk more specifically about the phase one and two data in terms of numbers of patients and what you saw?
Sure. The phase one data was 9 patients, 3 in one of 3 groups. There were 3 different doses of bevacizumab because we didn't know the right dose at that point when we launched it versus standard dose Herceptin. And we saw responses in all 3 groups. Now, 9 patients, so it's very small numbers. But the responses were pretty compelling in a first-line metastatic group. And in the third cohort was actually allowed to have more than one treatment. They were allowed to be beyond first line. So what we found was in that total group of 9, there were 2 complete responses, 3 partial responses, 2 stable diseases for greater than 11 months, and 2 patients who progressed. That was pretty exciting data for a small group, but you have to take that with a block of salt because it's only 9 patients. We've now expanded it into a phase two study looking at the two biologics together, first line metastatic disease. And what we're seeing up to this point for number of evaluable patients is something very similar to what we saw in that phase one. So we're out at 20 patients now in the phase two. Total experience about 29 patients. But we're seeing the same kinds of response rates in patients that get out to the point where we can evaluate the first scheduled response. So we're very encouraged by the data. It needs to mature further, but I think it's a rational regimen, and I think it'll make its way to the clinic in terms of a big clinical study.
Do you think it's ready to go into the adjuvant setting now?
I think it will go to the adjuvant setting now, whether it's ready. I think it's ready, but I tend to be a little more aggressive about looking at these things maybe than others. But I think I would not take it now until we finish this phase two study, which is supposed to be up to 50 patients. And look at what the response rate is and the response duration in those patients. And we'll know that relatively soon.
Knowing the dangers of, sort of looking at anecdotal cases or small series, just your gut look at these patients, other than the numbers in terms of response rates, what about the magnitude of response? Do you think that this is something that you would not have expected with trastuzumab alone?
Absolutely. Would not have expected it with trastuzumab alone or bevacizumab alone. And if we were just depending on the clinical observation, then I'd argue that you're right, Neil, because that's what we've done traditionally, just, put together things that we think sound rational and then we see what we get. But there's enormous preclinical data indicating the pathways are linked. And it's compelling and it's reproducible, and I think that you can show that these HER2-positive tumors by array analysis, looking at anybody's array data that's publicly available, when you're HER2-positive, your VEGF levels are much higher than the general breast cancer population. Getting back to the original premise we talked about very early on, that one size fits all doesn't work. You really need to know what's driving tumor A versus tumor B.
So when you say the VEGF levels are high, is that a direct stimulant with the ligand coming in terms of tumor growth?
Yes, we believe it's a direct stimulant. That we can't test in the clinic, but we can test it certainly preclinically. What do we know in the clinic? We know the HER2-positive tumors, age-matched, stage-matched control, are more metastatic and grow more rapidly. Now, there's direct growth stimulation of the HER2 pathway itself, and there's all the ancillary things you need to support faster and more aggressive tumor growth, not the least of which is neoangiogenesis. So it all makes sense. If we were just basing it on just thinking these might work well together versus the fact that the preclinical array data got us there, then I'd say, okay, I'm a little more concerned about it. But given the fact there's strong preclinical data and now clinical data, I'm comfortable with it.
Our CME group has had some interesting interactions over the last year or so with the colorectal cancer community as well as the lung cancer community. And one of the things that's come out of that in terms of bevacizumab is the concept of Bev potentiating chemotherapy, improving delivery of chemotherapy. And I would say that in general, even though obviously nobody really knows, that most people seem to be sort of in that camp. Do you buy into that? Do you think that's part of why it would potentiate or work well with trastuzumab? Or do you think that at least in HER2-positive breast cancer, that combination, there's something else going on?
I'm more in the camp of the latter, thinking there's something else going on. I think that there is interesting data, including some data from clinical material, indicating that there may be this gradient phenomena in terms of better penetration of chemotherapy. However, when you look at the doses achieved within the tissue, even when this is present, it's well above the IC50s. So the question is, do you get a lot more by what you get with this oncotic pressure issue that is thought to be one of the mechanisms of VEGF? It's clear that VEGF antibody will tie up circulating VEGF, and it's clear that certainly VEGF is one component needed for neoangiogenesis for a number of different kinds of tumors. So I think there's a lot of room for other mechanisms of how that would work.
Do you think, though, that changing the oncotic pressure, perfusion, et cetera, theoretically should be beneficial in terms of trastuzumab delivery?
Theoretically, but I mean, I would want to see data that is reproducible drug to drug across a couple different things. I think it's been demonstrated in one. There's now, as you probably are aware, controversial data saying that there are people that don't see that change in delivery into the interstitial space.